I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
With only 8 weeks until Election Day, our Republican colleagues are trying to do everything they can to blame Vice President Harris for what they now call the Biden-Harris border crisis. They label her the border czar and the leader of the administration's border policy, even though they know that that is not and never was the case. Let's be clear. Vice President Harris was never in charge of immigration policy for the Biden administration and was certainly not the border czar. That position does not exist, so of course she could not have been appointed to it. My Republican colleagues know this, of course, but have never let the facts get in the way of their messaging. The truth is that President Biden directed Vice President Harris to address the root causes of migration from Mexico and the Northern Triangle.
So it's important for Congressman Jerry Nadler to reiterate to people like you and me, you know, sillies out there who keep calling Kamala Harris the border czar, which was like all of the networks, not just a Fox News thing. They all did it. She wasn't in charge of the immigration policy. That wasn't her task. She was supposed to study migration patterns as if they were birds and as harmless as such. That's not what she was put in there to do, not to manage our immigration system and not to help secure the border. To which my next question would be, okay, who did the Biden administration put in charge of the border? And who is responsible for the state of it right now? Let's ask somebody who knows a little bit about some of this stuff. Jim Carafano back with us, senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, thanks for being with us here today. We appreciate you coming back on with us. Oh, we lost him? Okay. Well, we're going to get him back on the line here in just a sec. I want to play for you another clip while we are working to get him on here, because there's another issue that is very much so in the forefront. Knowing that, remember when that the Afghanistan withdrawal, Joe Biden came up and told us that we were going to be completely out of Afghanistan by September 11th of that year, that we were supposed to completely vacate and exit Afghanistan by September 11th. What they ended up doing was they ended up hurrying it up and getting it moved forward to get it done a little bit earlier.
She certainly was at the table for all those national security decisions. She's spoken herself about her support for the decision to end the war and her contribution to the policy discussions and the planning that went into the withdrawal. She was at the center of that, of course, as she would be as vice president. But this idea, first of all, that they're now throwing humor into this is clearly just shows the partisan nature of this report and the political nature of it, the timing of it here coming the day before the debate. I mean, it's hard to escape that.
So you got John Kirby saying that this that Harris was at the table for all of the negotiations. I mean, Kamala Harris is bragging about being the last person in the room. That was an asset to her when she said it on the in that interview. Were you the last one in the room? Yes, she was. And when we put it in and you put her into the conversation there where she is bragging about being at the very, very, very center of that decision-making process to pull out of Afghanistan when we did, does she have to own the results of the consequences of those decisions as well? Because guess what? A real leader will own those consequences. They will make the decision based on what they think is best. And then sometimes there's fallout. But if there is fallout that they will not own, that they will not stand beside, then how do you know that they knew that they were making the right decision in the beginning for the right reasons? How confident are you that Joe Biden, when he made that decision, was making it for the right reasons? Because if he was making it for the right reasons, he would understand that we are in a position where, you know, I think anybody who puts the uniform on to go serve their country, anybody who is in a position to sign their name on that line and make that promise to their country, they are going to know and understand what the full embodiment of what that means. And when you do that, you're entrusting the commander-in-chief with your service for a cause that you've all agreed to protect and defend the United States of America. If Joe Biden and Kamala Harris felt like their withdrawal from Afghanistan was according to that mission, then they should be able to stand by the consequences of that actions if they were doing that, not for the betterment and what was in the best interest of the United States of America, then it becomes a little bit harder to defend your decisions with the consequences all in tow. If you can't go in front of a camera and stand confidently by the tragedies that existed because you made a decision that you believed was in the best interest of the United States of America, if you can't stand by it, then I don't believe that you made the best decision with the best of intentions. And I think that's the biggest problem here is we've watched the Biden-Harris administration completely run away from the consequences of those tragic decisions that tomorrow being September 11th was supposed to be. I mean, imagine the politics behind that, saying that you were going to be withdrawn from Afghanistan completely by September 11th. And then they moved it up a little bit to be more politically expedient. I mean, that's a disgusting display of politics that ended up costing the lives that he would not even acknowledge at the last debate he was in. That Joe Biden didn't even honor when they were on the tarmac and he was checking his watch to find out what time it was. I think if he really believed that he was making the decisions in an interest that was bigger than his administration's own, than the Biden-Harris political outcome of being able to say you got everybody out of those wars, got everybody out of Afghanistan, being able to do that, if it was something that you had thought out and clearly planned out, you'd be able to stand by it. But not only has he not stood by it, he hasn't acknowledged it. And he's dishonored people who deserve every bit of his respect, every minute of his time that they want to have. And he can't find it. And she won't find it. She won't acknowledge it. She acknowledges that she's the important person in the room making the decisions, but she's not willing to absorb the consequences. Boy, that sounds like a Democrat if I ever heard one. Wants to be the man or the woman in the room that is there to make the power moves, to assert their infinite wisdom on how to run other people's lives. And then when it doesn't go so great afterwards, you just run in an opposite direction. It's pretty reprehensible. And then you have the first clip that I played there with Congressman Nadler advocating for the fact that Kamala Harris was never in charge of immigration policy. That she was never, of course, who's never the border czar. That was never part of who she was or what she was supposed to do. And it's some sort of conservative talking point that she was to be this person who was going to fix the problem that we have on the southern border. We have the clip of Joe Biden. You can see the video of Joe Biden sitting at the table. I believe Kamala Harris is to his right. And he looks over and he says, you are the most qualified person for this job. If we are to believe what the Democrats are saying right now, if we are to listen to them really pull back the responsibility of the person who wants to be the last one in the room with the president of the United States to make these big decisions, if she's the last one in the room and she was not the one who was in charge of border policy, of immigration policy, then who was? Because to me, if it's not the vice president of the United States, if it's not Kamala Harris, it just goes right back up to the top. That's Joe Biden. And we know who the last person in the room with Joe Biden is when they're making big decisions. And the southern border, that's a pretty big decision. The amount of executive orders, I think it's like 300 executive orders that were enacted in the Biden administration that have to do with opening the southern border back up from what Donald Trump had done in his administration. The actions that they specifically took from the executive office to undo what Donald Trump had done. The border policy of the Biden-Harris administration is to undo what Donald Trump did. And you can see the results yourself. Coming to a neighborhood near you, if it's not there already. Gangs, violence, drugs, poverty, coming in to use the resources that are coming from your paycheck to reinvest into your communities, those resources now being sucked up by people who came here because the Biden-Harris administration asked them to come. There's no way around it. And the border is a huge, huge issue that this new administration under Kamala Harris will have to answer to. And she better be asked about it tonight. She better be asked tonight at this debate how she's going to differentiate herself from Joe Biden. Some people have called you the border czar, Vice President Harris. Many people have tried to correct the record since then and say that you were not in charge of the southern border. Who was in charge of the southern border? And if it weren't you, what would you have done differently? Because we know from her own words that she wanted to close down detention centers. We know from her own words that she wants to streamline the process to a pathway to citizenship for the people who are here. We know from her words that she wants to provide them, if you listen to Tim Murtaugh, taxpayer-funded sex changes for illegal immigrants who are here. I mean, there is no limit to what Kamala Harris wants to provide the illegal immigrant into our country. There's no limit. And we are sitting here waiting for her to put her own words to her policy, what she will do should she become the president of the United States. We are waiting to find out what her policy is in her own words, because as we said earlier in the show, Tim Murtaugh reinforced it. A large majority of what is on KamalaHarris.com is a copy paste of the source code that comes from Joe Biden's campaign website. They're Joe Biden's policies. If you want more Joe Biden, unfortunately, because of the higher ups in the Democrat Party, you can't have Joe Biden. They took him out and they put Kamala Harris in place, but pretty much everything is going to stay the same. That's democracy for you. And ironically, the main platform piece for the Harris attack line against Donald Trump is that you need to vote for her to protect democracy. I don't really know what the Democrat Party is doing it, but it sure doesn't look like the Democratic Republic that we were told we can have if we can keep it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, well, in the 140, we're going to have the Lutheran schools back in here. We've got a really exciting announcement coming up here shortly from them. I'm excited to have them come in, and we are going to make an announcement of sorts. Brew in the Lou is headed our way, and I want you to check out brewinthelou.com to get your tickets secured. This is an incredible event. It's October 12th. All the benefits, all the proceeds from Brew in the Lou are going to help local Lutheran schools, to help kids have access to an amazing Lutheran education, which I wholeheartedly stand behind as somebody who sends my kids to a Lutheran school. Can't say enough great stuff about it. And by the way, if you have questions about Lutheran education, connect with the Annie Fry Show on Facebook. Send me a DM there. I'm happy to answer those questions as well. Certainly the best education you can.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Get out there. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Do you think the Vice President should separate herself from Biden's policy in Israel?
I think that we need a new chapter when it comes to U.S. funding, particularly in making sure that U.S. dollars are consistent with U.S. law, which means not allowing U.S. funding to go towards forces that are engaged in human rights violations, as well as the withholding of humanitarian assistance.
So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has some advice for Kamala Harris, saying she should push herself away a little bit from Biden's policy on Israel. You know, I'm not really much for playing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on the Annie Fry Show, but it does really show that there is a rift in the Democratic Party. Which way are they going to go? And is there a way to appease both wings of the Democrat Party, the pro-Israel side and what I'm just going to call the pro-Hamas side? Can they do both? I don't know that they can. And we'll see if she gets asked a question, if Kamala Harris gets asked a question about that tonight. All right. Jim Carafano with us now, senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson fellow for international engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, thank you for the time today. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, sorry, I'm in Albania, and Albania is a little bit noisy, so if there's some background noise.
That's okay. We're happy to have you. I want to know what you think about what policy positions the Biden administration has had and where Kamala might take it.
I want to go back to this Israel-Hamas thing for a second, because I want to make a prediction. And And I always save the predictions for your show, because remember when the day after the election, the first time we talked, they said we're going to have a flood of illegal aliens in this country, and you know, by the end of Biden's term, we were going to double the illegal population in the United States.
You did,
and you know, I should have just retired at that moment, right? It's like after you hit the cycle, you should just retire. So my prediction is if we stay on the trajectory that we're on in American politics, within a decade, we're going to have a major national Islamist party in the United States. Now, I don't know if it's going to be the Democratic Party or a party that splits off of the Democratic Party, or the Democratic Party is going to be replaced by the Islamist Party, but that is the path we are headed on. Harris is in the AOC camp, right? She is not the old guard of the Democratic Party trying to straddle a line between, well, Israel's an ally, and, oh, yeah, we don't like what they're doing, and, you know, we want to, you know, be nice to the people of Hamas. She is in the wing of the Democratic Party, which actually has an Islamist agenda, which isn't much different from that you would find in Iran or in Lebanon or in Gaza or in the Sahel, for that matter, or in Somalia. So Harris is a true believer. She's on their side. So AOC, could her views and the view of the squad, Harris could be part of the squad. That is, if Harris is president, that will become the direction of the Democratic Party on not just policy in the Middle East, but on dealing with all these Islamist regimes.
Can
I add one thing?
Yeah, please.
Because just a footnote to this. A little noticed in the news was a foiled terrorist attack where somebody was going to come across the border and go to New York City and kill a bunch of Jews. And the estimates are that if that attack had gone off as planned, that would have been a bigger, in terms of total death, bigger than 9/11.
Was that recent?
We just dodged that bullet. Yes, that was this way. We just dodged that bullet.
There were reports of a lot of a heavy presence of, I guess, was it guardsmen? A lot of different people were in New York, and it was like that was reported on, but not really discussed in a wide way, I don't think, in our news cycle. Why is that?
No, because it's we don't talk about foiled terrorist attack. When we foil them, we just say, oh yeah, look what a great job we're doing, right? And the reality is you know, the terrorists are like the Terminator. They don't stop. A foiled attack just means learn your lessons and do better next time. You know, it's like people, you know, all went to sleep after the first bombing of the World Trade Center, which, you know, failed. And they just said, oh, yeah, look what a great job we're doing. And all it did was Bin Laden went back to the drawing board and figured out a better way to bring the buildings down and kill thousands of people. I'm so tired of the lights are flashing red flags or whatever. We talk about so many different problems with illegal migration, but we are so open to a terrorist attack. And here, because if an Islamist is running the United States of America.
Did we lose him? Jim, you there? Oh, I think we're having trouble with the signal. Are you there, Jim? I can hear the line.
But they're not all bad guys. And we'll be worse off. And I have said this on your show before. We are more vulnerable to Islamist terrorism today than we were in 9/11. They have demolished, disorganized, distracted all the instruments of national security that were supposed to keep us safe from these guys.
Is it intentional?
Yeah, absolutely, it was intentional. So look, they are interested in, and you know, Joe Biden, you know, he was just the guy that drank the Kool-Aid. He didn't invent this stuff, but he wanted to be president. So they said, well, you can be president, but the cost of that is not just your soul, it's your sanity. You have to embrace this transformational vision of the radical left. That, you know, Obama was too cowardly to even enunciate it in his presidency. I mean, if you remember when Obama came into office, for example, he was against gay marriage.
Yeah.
He wasn't against gay marriage, but he just wanted to be president. But he's the father. He's the son of this radical objective. And Biden, he just bought into that because that's what it, you know, took to get to let him become president. Harris is a believer. She is part of the mafia. She is part of the cult. She is part of the chosen. She wants to radically transform America. And what did they do? They basically went back to the Obama playbook for the first term, which is Obama ran as a moderate. And you couldn't tell the difference between Obama and McCain. Joe Biden ran as a moderate. He didn't tell me. You know, there was like 5 minutes in the last debate where Biden actually enunciated the immigration open borders policy, and kind of nobody paid attention to it. So in a year long campaign, it got about 5 minutes of discussion from Biden, and then voters didn't even notice it until after the election. Harris is the real deal. She is the radical transformation that George Soros has always wanted. And her running as a moderate is and you know, new change and new start. That's just laughable.
Jim, I want to ask you one more question, then we'll let you go. And we're really appreciative of your time today, especially while you're traveling. But there's a big debate tonight. I don't know if you're going to be watching the debate or not. But is it true that, like, America is at a fork in the road with this election coming up, that just from the policy positions, from what is going on in the world around us and what you're talking about is coming to our shores, it's actually here already. I mean, are the policy plans of these two administrations, potential administrations, about as starkly different as they could possibly be?
Yeah, and well, first of all, I won't be watching because I'm in Albania. It'll be like 3 o'clock in the morning, so sorry about that.
You'll be sleeping. But
this should be, look, this isn't, this, and I think it will in the end, this will be an issue campaign, not the orange hair and other stuff. These administrations are literally polar opposites on every single issue, bread and butter issue that attacks the American voter. I don't know how much more to say. It's like you cannot, you know, let's fight, be bipartisan. When you reach a fork in the road, dude, you have to take it. Otherwise, you tumble off into the abyss.
Well, Jim, we appreciate you, and we look forward to talking to you each week. Thank you for giving us some of your time today, and safe travels to you.
Thanks, friend.
Thanks. Bye. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Jim Carafano, the senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Very kind of him to factor us into his afternoon, his day. I don't know, whatever time it is in Albania. I looked up Albania. It's right across the pond from the heel of Italy's boot. That's where Albania is, by Greece. All right, let's take a quick break. I'm excited. The next guest we have coming in here from the Lutheran Elementary Schools. Oh, my gosh, I love this partnership with them. Brew in the Lou is one of the coolest events taking place. You know how St. Louis loves their beer? Lutherans don't mind a beer. We'll call them a good Lutheran beverage. Now, after 12 years of Brew in the Lou, they've commissioned their first ever custom brew for this event. And we're going to make an announcement about that here on the Annie Fry Show when we come back and talk a little bit more about Lutheran education. So you're going to want to stick around for that. Come join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. This is a good opportunity for you to get in there, answer the YouTube live chat poll, which is, how do you see the presidential election ending? We want to know your predictions before the debate. Kamala landslide, Trump landslide, or a Tromala. There we go. Trump or Kamala, close victory, you tell us. Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Happy Tuesday. It's debate day. I know everybody's getting ready for this evening. And I think that it's very possible that there may be one or two beers cracked open tonight while people are watching the debate. And we've got some, this is the weirdest segue ever to talk about beer and Lutheran schools at the same time, but there are going to be beers sold to help Lutheran schools. Brew in the Lou, one of the coolest events in St. Louis for you to check out. We're going to talk about that and Lutheran education here a little bit with Libby Guberle and Amy Colvin, who are back in studio with us. Welcome back, ladies.
Thank you. I think that was a brilliant segue.
Thank you. I don't know about you guys. You ever call them Lutheran beverages? You ever been around people who call them Lutheran beverages?
Or, yes, Lou-brew.
Lou-brew. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. So did we decide we wanted to lead with this? I think we did, or do we want to push it off to the end? Because we got a big announcement.
We have a big announcement. Let's talk about schools, and then we'll just build up the momentum for the announcement.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. So we'll just say Brew in the Loo is a really, really cool event. I'm going to ask you guys to talk about Brew in the Loo here in a second. But it's a big fundraiser, and it helps fund Lutheran education. So let's talk about, Libby, let's talk about Brew in the Loo and what the event is, and then maybe we can get into how it does help get kids in Lutheran schools across the St. Louis area.
Well, the background, a lot of Lutherans are German, and Germans love their beer.
Yes.
And Martin Luther loved his beer, and he was a brewer. And we have a number of actual pastors here in town that are brew their own brews. So it's not that a surprise for a Lutheran to a good German Lutheran to love his beer, but or her beer. The Brew in the Loo has been around for 12 years. So this will be our 12th out at Francis Park. We started at the seminary in the early days, and it grew so big that we're out at Francis Park. Beautiful location, Lily Pond. We wrap around that. We have over 100 beers represented, and it's all samples. And so you buy a ticket, and you can just hang out there for 4 hours. And we also have some food to keep that balance.
you gotta balance it out. Great food, great drinks. The event is October 12th. And you can go to brewintheloo.com right now and get tickets reserved, right?
Right.
That's right.
So, Amy, when people buy their tickets and they have a great afternoon, October 12th, like you said, at Francis Park, Brew in the Loo, that money that is raised from those tickets that are sold, where does that money go?
Sure. Well, we have three purposes for the Lutheran Elementary School Association. And the first is to provide tuition assistance access to schools. So those of you that might have fearful of that number, which, as you always point out, Annie, is extremely affordable.
Yeah, way more affordable than people ever think.
100%. But there's still some people who still have that affinity or struggle. So we provide assistance to make sure that everybody can have access that wants it. And so that's our number one mission with the Lutheran Elementary School Association. The second is we educate and support the teachers and administrators. We use those funds to help them innovate the classroom. We give them additional training and all the kinds of things, and regular training 4 times a year on stress in the classroom, leadership, all of the things, dealing with difficult students. Not that any of them have those. But, so we provide that additional training to allow them to provide innovation and excellence in that classroom. And so that we provide the excellent education that we always talk about in the school. So that's what Lisa does. And then we provide marketing. This is it. We're talking about Lutheran schools. We bring it from the 10,000-foot level so that we're not marketing one school, we're marketing all 37 schools. And we want to make sure that people know, as you do, that Lutheran education is a viable and important alternative in education.
Yes, and it's incredibly accessible. I mean, even when you get that first initial call, I mean, I have a kid at a Lutheran high school and two in a Lutheran elementary school. And when I tell people the number, you know, it's a bigger number than your property taxes that are paying for the public education. But there's a big reason why a lot of people are trying to look for alternatives. And when they find out that number, and every school is kind of set up a little bit differently in the way that tuition is paid for or how that is accommodated. But they're always like, oh, really? Their eyes are kind of wide open. Like, they start to think, maybe I could afford this. And I know I've spoken to many grandparents who are watching, you know, they have put their kids in public school, but now they're watching their grandkids and they're seeing what's going on out there, and they want an alternative opportunity for their grandchildren. And so they are going to lesastl.org/Annie to say, what is this about? They just want to learn a little bit more. And the thing that I'll say about Lutheran education, as a product of Lutheran education, all education has changed since I was in school in the 90s. Like, the way we educate kids is completely different. And I say this as somebody who has kids in school right now, but is also married to a middle school teacher in the public school environment. And just like paying attention to how we educate kids now versus the way we did then, everything has changed. But when you go to a Lutheran school, you are absolutely not sacrificing any sort of educational advantage. You are gaining an environment where you go in there knowing the values that are going to be reinforced that I have out of my home. For our home, it's a biblical foundation. It's there at that educational outlet. It's reinforced by the teachers. It's reinforced by the administration. There is right. There is wrong. But there is also forgiveness, which is such an important part of that whole cycle. But there's also sports. And I'm a volleyball coach, and my husband and I help coach basketball, and we've helped with track and all of these opportunities. There's robotics at a lot of these schools. There's a bunch of STEM opportunities. There's choir. My kids have done violin and piano. I think they're all in school right now, so they're not listening. They're better than average, maybe, at some of them. The recorder year, glad that's over. But you get the opportunity to have all of these experiences that I just don't think are as afforded in the public school environment. You get more from a Lutheran school. And when you let your kids over to these institutions, you don't have to worry about what they are going to be educated about. In fact, they are going to pick up right where you leave off. And when you get them back, you're still going to recognize them. It's such a wonderful experience.
And it's not just outside. It's not just the sports and the school. It's the relationships you build around your school. So I had kids at a Lutheran school. My best friends, and to this day, are still the fellow parents from that school.
Yeah.
And so and together we go to, some of us go to the same church. Sometimes we just had just such similar relationships. And with our kids being friends, it was extended beyond school.
I think that's a really good point, too, because as a parent who is turning my kids, you know, kids are like, can I go to such and such's house? Can I have this person? There's a different, you know, you still got to do your due diligence as you always would. And if somebody were asking me questions about my home and about things, I would understand that the parent was trying to make sure that if they turned their kid over to me, that it was a safe environment. Mm-hmm. But you just have a more agreed upon set of values that are welcoming to people who aren't, you don't have to be a card carrying, I don't think that we have cards, I don't have a card, but a card carrying Lutheran to come to a school. I went to school when I was in the 90s with Baptists, with Catholics, with people who didn't really go to church, same thing in high school. Like, there are all kinds of kinds there, but you do have this values-based, biblical-based foundation. Like I always say, like, it's worth it for me that they hear about Jesus every day. And the math and the English, that's good too. Like, that's a very valuable thing for us in our house. And it's priceless, but it is also affordable. Mm. So Brew in the Lou is a big part of that.
It is. It raises, last year it raised $100,000 for our effort.
Is that tops? Have you ever?
Well, we don't have a huge amount of history on that in terms of numbers, but it's pretty good. And we had 1,300 in attendance. We hope to have 1,800. We sell out at 1,800 because we want everybody to have a great experience and make sure there's enough beer flowing.
That's right. We need the people to show up.
Well, our brewers like to pour. You know, and sometimes they run out. So we want to make sure it's a great experience for everybody. Plus, we have St. Louis and artisans and other vendors. And of course, the food, as Libby was talking about, a lot of the churches are supplying the food. So there's free food plus free food to buy. Which drive-in do we have that is coming? All of a sudden, I'm blanking on the drive-in.
High Point.
High Point. Thank you so much. So they don't do it. Nothing is better than High Point. They are so good. So they're there to buy. So you have the good relationship of all of the spirits. We have spirits. We have wine. We have beer. There's something to drink for everybody. I'm still working on getting a non-alcoholic beer, too. A lot of people have asked for that, whether they're pregnant or...
Sure.
We do have a designated driver ticket to the event. So that's another cool thing. So it's a $25 ticket across the board in case, you know, there's somebody who either doesn't want to drink or doesn't drink or is just going to be the designated driver for the day. So
that's
there's something
great
for everybody to come and enjoy. And
they have a band.
They have a band, Steve Ewing Band.
All right.
Yeah.
This is you got to check it out. It's October 12th. Go to brewintheloo.com. Now, you've been doing this for 12 years. You commissioned the first ever custom brew for this event. We've got about 3 minutes left here and then we got to run, but you've partnered with Good News Brewing. Talk to me about this competition that you have, Good News Brewing, and then maybe we'll have a big reveal here in just a second.
Yeah, Good News has been a partner with Brew in the Lou for many years, and they are a Christian-based brewery. So when we decided we wanted to commission a custom brew, we went to them first and said, will you partner? And they quickly said yes, so we're thankful. Their head brewer, Justin Gedalion, won our bottle competition last year that's associated with Brew in the Lou through the St. Louis Homebrewers Guild. So he's wonderful, and he did this. He created a California Common for us. I haven't tried it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening this Saturday. We all get to try it together. But we are so excited about it. And we decided to involve the community and ask them to help us name it. We were kind of coming up with names in the office, and they were bad.
Like, let's put this on somebody else.
We're like, maybe somebody else is more creative than we are out there. It'd be fun to involve the community. So in July, we sent out the call on social media and within our community, and we had 50 entries, and everybody could do three, in which they did. And we ended up having 130 entries for this naming contest.
Awesome. And then from then, to pick the actual winner, is it a vote or was it?
So it was two things. I have an academic side. So, you know, I also teach at St. Louis Community College. So I had to get my weighted academic stuff in there. So we sent it out to a smaller group of people who weighted all of the entries from 1 to 5. And so any entry that got at least a 5 was taken out. We had that narrowed it down to 24. Then we took the top 10 based on the weight and the total score.
Oh, I love the process. So organized. I love it.
And then the small group picked the final. But the final did come out to be the top scoring and the top weighted. It was just the one that everybody said was the best.
Well, we've got a minute left. Is it time to reveal the name of the commissioned beer for Brew in the Loo?
Here it is.
Drum roll, please.
Back Pew.
Oh, that's a great name. Oh, I love it. That is the most Lutheran thing I've ever heard. And there are probably other denominations out there that have the same joke, but yeah. You fill the church from the back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Happy Tuesday. It's debate day. I know everybody's getting ready for this evening. And I think that it's very possible that there may be one or two beers cracked open tonight while people are watching the debate. And we've got this is the weirdest segue ever to talk about beer and Lutheran schools at the same time. But there are going to be beers sold to help Lutheran schools. Brew in the Loo, one of the coolest events in St. Louis for you to check out. We're going to talk about that and Lutheran education here a little bit with Libby Guberle and Amy Colvin, who are back in studio with us. Welcome back, ladies.
Thank you.
And I think that was a brilliant segue.
Thank you. I don't know about you guys. You ever call them Lutheran beverages? You ever been around people who call them Lutheran beverages?
Or, yes, Lubrew.
Lubrew. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. So did we decide we wanted to lead with this? I think we did. Or do we want to push it off to the end? Because we got a big announcement.
We have a big announcement. Let's talk about schools. And then we'll just build up the momentum for the announcement.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. So we'll just say Brew in the Loo is a really, really cool event. I'm going to ask you guys to talk about Brew in the Loo here in a second, but it's a big fundraiser and it helps fund Lutheran education. So let's talk about, Libby, let's talk about Brew in the Loo and what the event is, and then maybe we can get into how it does help get kids in Lutheran schools across the St. Louis area.
Well, the background, a lot of Lutherans are German, and Germans love their beer.
Yes.
And Martin Luther loved his beer, and he was a brewer. And we have a number of actual pastors here in town that are brew their own brews. So it's not that a surprise for a Lutheran to a good German Lutheran to love his beer, but or her beer. The Brew in the Loo has been around for 12 years, so this will be our 12th out at Francis Park. We started at the seminary in the early days, and it grew so big that we're out at Francis Park. Beautiful location, Lily Pond. We wrap around that. We have over 100 beers represented, and it's all samples. And so you buy a ticket and you can just hang out there for 4 hours. And we also have some food to keep that balance.
Yeah, you gotta balance it out. Great food, great drinks. The event is October 12th. And you can go to brewintheloo.com right now and get tickets reserved, right?
Right.
That's right.
So, Amy, when people buy their tickets and they have a great afternoon, October 12th, like you said, at Francis Park, Brew in the Loo, that money that is raised from those tickets that are sold, where does that money go?
Sure. Well, we have three purposes for the Lutheran Elementary School Association. And the first is to provide tuition assistance access to schools. So those of you that might have fearful of that number, which, as you always point out, Annie, is extremely affordable.
Yeah, way more affordable than people ever think.
100%. But there's still some people who still have that affinity or struggle. So we provide assistance to make sure that everybody can have access that wants it. And so that's our number one mission with the Lutheran Elementary School Association. The second is we educate and support the teachers and administrators. We use those funds to help them innovate the classroom. We give them additional training and all the kinds of things, and regular training 4 times a year on stress in the classroom, leadership, all of the things, dealing with difficult students. Not that any of them have those, but you know, so we provide that additional training to allow them to provide innovation and excellence in that classroom. And so that we provide the excellent education that we always talk about in the school. So that's what Lisa does. And then we provide marketing. This is it. You know, we're talking about Lutheran schools. We bring it from the 10,000 foot level so that you, we're not marketing one school, we're marketing all 37 schools. And we want to make sure that people know, as you do, that Lutheran education is a viable and important alternative in education.
And it's incredibly accessible. I mean, even when you get that first initial call, I mean, I have a kid at a Lutheran high school and two in a Lutheran elementary school. And when I tell people the number, you know, it's a bigger number than your property taxes that are paying for the public education. But there's a big reason why a lot of people are trying to look for alternatives. And when they find out that number, and every school is kind of set up a little bit differently in the way that tuition is paid for or how that is accommodated. But they're always like, oh, really? I mean, their eyes are kind of wide open. Like, they start to think, maybe I could afford this. And I know I've spoken to many grandparents who are watching, you know, they have put their kids in public school, but now they're watching their grandkids and they're seeing what's going on out there, and they want an alternative opportunity for their grandchildren. And so they are going to lesastl.org/Annie to say, what is this about? They just want to learn a little bit more. And the thing that I'll say about Lutheran education, as a product of Lutheran education, all education has changed since I was in school in the 90s. Like, the way we educate kids is completely different. And I say this as somebody who has kids in school right now, but is also married to a middle school teacher in the public school environment. And just like paying attention to how we educate kids now versus the way we did then, everything has changed. But when you go to a Lutheran school, you are absolutely not sacrificing any sort of educational advantage. You are gaining an environment where you go in there knowing the values that are going to be reinforced that I have out of my home. For our home, it's a biblical foundation. It's there at that educational outlet. It's reinforced by the teachers. It's reinforced by the administration. There is right. There is wrong, but there is also forgiveness, which is such an important part of that whole cycle. But there's also sports. And I'm a volleyball coach, and my husband and I help coach basketball, and we've helped with track and all of these opportunities. There's robotics at a lot of these schools. There's a bunch of STEM opportunities. There's choir. My kids have done violin and piano. They're not, let's see. I think they're all in school right now, so they're not listening. They're better than average, maybe, at some of them. The recorder year, glad that's over. But you get the opportunity to have all of these experiences that I just don't think are as afforded in the public school environment. You get more from a Lutheran school. And when you let your kids over to these institutions, you don't have to worry about what they are going to be educated about. In fact, they are going to pick up right where you leave off. And when you get them back, you're still going to recognize them. It's such a wonderful experience.
And it's not just outside. It's not just the sports and the school. It's the relationships you build around your school. So I had kids at a Lutheran school. My best friends, and to this day, are still the fellow parents from that school.
Yeah.
And so and together we go to, some of us go to the same church. Sometimes we just had just such similar relationships. And with our kids being friends, it was extended beyond school.
I think that's a really good point, too, because as a parent who is turning my kids, you know, kids are like, can I go to such and such's house? Can I have this person? There's a different, you know, you still got to do your due diligence, as you always would. And if somebody were asking me questions about my home and about things, I would understand that the parent was trying to make sure that if they turned their kid over to me, that it was a safe environment. But you just have a more agreed upon set of values that are welcoming to people who aren't, you don't have to be a card carrying, I don't think that we have cards, I don't have a card, but a card carrying Lutheran to come to a school. I went to school when I was in the 90s with Baptists, with Catholics, with people who didn't really go to church, same thing in high school. Like, there are all kinds of kinds there, but you do have this this values-based, biblical-based foundation. Like I always say, like, it's worth it for me that they hear about Jesus every day. And the math of the English, that's good too. Like, that's a very valuable thing for us in our house. And it's priceless, but it is also affordable. Mm. So Brew in the Loo is a big part of that.
It is. Last year it raised $100,000 for our effort.
Is that tops?
Well, we don't have a huge amount of history on that in terms of numbers, but it's pretty good. And we had 1,300 in attendance. We hope to have 1,800. We sell out at 1,800 because we want everybody to have a great experience and make sure there's enough beer flowing.
That's right. We need the people to show up.
Well, our brewers like to pour. You know, and sometimes they run out. So we want to make sure it's a great experience for everybody. Plus, we have St. Louis and artisans and other vendors. And of course, the food, as Libby was talking about, a lot of the churches are supplying the food. So there's free food plus free food to buy. Which drive-in do we have that is coming? All of a sudden, I'm blanking on the drive-in.
High Point.
Thank you so much. So they don't do it. Nothing is better than High Point. They are so good. So they're there to buy. So you have the good relationship of all of the spirits. We have spirits. We have wine. We have beer. There's something to drink for everybody. I'm still working on getting a non-alcoholic beer, too. A lot of people have asked for that, whether they're pregnant or...
Sure.
We do have a designated driver ticket to the event. So that's another cool thing. So it's a $25 ticket across the board in case, you know, there's somebody who either doesn't want to drink or doesn't drink or is just going to be the designated driver for the day. So there's something for everybody to come and enjoy. And
they have a band.
They have a band. Steve Ewing band.
All right.
Yeah.
This is you got to check it out. It's October 12th. Go to brewintheloo.com. Now, you've been doing this for 12 years. You commissioned the first ever custom brew for this event. We've got about 3 minutes left here and then we got to run, but you've partnered with Good News Brewing. Talk to me about this competition that you have, Good News Brewing, and then maybe we'll have a big reveal here in just a second.
Yeah, Good News has been a partner with Brew in the Loo for many years, and they are a Christian-based brewery. So when we decided we wanted to commission a custom brew, we went to them first and said, will you partner? And they quickly said yes, so we're thankful. Their head brewer, Justin Gedalion, won our bottle competition last year that's associated with Brew in the Loo through the St. Louis Homebrewers Guild. So he's wonderful, and he did this. He created a California Common for us. I haven't tried it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening this Saturday. We all get to try it together. But we are so excited about it. And we decided to involve the community and ask them to help us name it. We were kind of coming up with names in the office and they were bad.
Like, let's put this on somebody else.
We're like, maybe somebody else is more creative than we are out there. It'd be fun to involve the community. So in July, we sent out the call on social media and within our community. And we had 50 entries and everybody could do three. In which they did. And ended up having 130 entries for this naming contest.
Awesome. And then from then, to pick the actual winner, is it a vote or was it?
So it was two things. I have an academic side. So, you know, I also teach at St. Louis Community College. So I had to get my weighted academic stuff in there. So send it out to a smaller group of people who weighted all of the entries from 1 to 5. And so any entry that got at least a 5 was taken out. We had that narrowed it down to 24. Then we took the top 10 based on the weight and the total score.
Oh, I love the process. So organized. I love it.
And then the small group picked the final. But the final did come out to be the top scoring and the top weighted. It was just the one that everybody said was the best.
Well, we've got a minute left. Is it time reveal the name of the commissioned beer for Brew in the Loo?
Here it is.
Drum roll, please.
Back Pew.
Oh, that's a great name. Oh, I love it. That is the most Lutheran thing I've ever heard. And there are probably other denominations out there that have the same joke, but yeah. You fill the church from the back forward if you're the Lutheran. But the goal is to fill that church.
Everybody loved it, and that was submitted by Bill Maxfield.
Well, so congratulations, Bill.
Gets 2 VIP tickets to Brew in the Loo.
Well, thank you both for coming in here.
Thanks for having us.
Libby and Amy, LESASTL.org. brewinthelou.org/Annie. Please go check out the website. If you can't go to Brew in the Lou, but this is something I know so many of you out there listening right now have been touched by Lutheran education, get on there and make a donation to make somebody else's. It'll change their life. It'll legitimately change their life to be able to get them in a Lutheran school. I appreciate you guys so much. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Annie.
October 12th, brewinthelou.com. You need to check it out. You'll be very glad you did. Let me know how it was after you go. All right, back pew. Gotta go get me some of that. We'll be right back.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.